Dissonance Media and the Other Stories presents. Step into the abyss of After the Gloaming, a gothic fiction podcast that delves into the depths of human emotion. Unyielding love, revenge, internal struggles, and restless souls await you in 9 haunting episodes, where dread, fear, and rare glimpses of eerie happiness linger. Dare to listen on your favorite podcatcher? After the Gloaming beckons. Search now, but beware. Innocence will be left behind.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
These aren't the stories your mother told you. No, these are the other stories.
Today's episode of The Other Stories is Dig, written by Ian J. Middleton and narrated by James Barnett, aka Jimmy Horace.
You didn't need to be fluent in Russian to know the campsite was closed. The multiple signs that Tony cycled past, whether they were hammered into tree trunks or propped up against dilapidated fence posts, all implied the same frustrating message. The dirt road he'd been following for the past half hour came to an abrupt end at a moss-covered gate. Beyond was a grassy area about the size of a football pitch. Aging trees lined the perimeter, their branches intertwining to form a thick canopy that would provide shelter from all but the heaviest of downpours. Tony leant his touring bicycle against a clump of thick bushes and inspected yet another sign. A black silhouette of a tent sat within a crudely drawn circle, with a scribbled line through it. A jumble of letters and shapes, indecipherable to anyone not versed in the local language, spelt out the symbol of denial. A depressed sigh escaped Tony's lips as he once again regretted the frugal purchase of the out-of-date guidebook. It had been a several-kilometre freewheel on his fully laden bike to get here, and his body ached in protest at the thought of riding back up that road in search of another place to camp for the night. He inspected the gate. A shiny padlock and chain reinforced the sentiment of the signs. The gleaming metal seemed so out of place in this backward area of rolling countryside. Over the past few days he'd passed horses dragging overfilled carts, weary farmers harvesting and scythes of oxen ploughing fields. He never thought he'd miss the sight of asphalt, but the crumbling potholed roads were taking their toll on his body, bike, and patience. Tony looked back at the hill he'd just rolled down. It seemed bigger from down here. Further investigation confirmed that there were no farmhouses around or other signs of civilization. Deep in thought, he ran a grubby hand through long hair that was due for a trim several months ago. A glance at the darkening skies served to reinforce his unlawful intentions. With a shrug, the panniers were unclipped from the bike and slung over the gate. He glanced over his trusty steed. It appeared weak and naked without the stuffed bags attached to it. The red frame was scuffed and scratched, the tires bulging, and the improvised flagpole that once waved the Union Jack flag so proudly, drooped to the point of snapping again. With a grunt, he lifted the bike over the gate. The bags were reattached and his belongings were wheeled to the far corner of the field. If he was going to spend the night, then it was in his interest to be inconspicuous about it. Several mounds of earth were passed as he crossed the campsite, while some were in various stages of reclamation by Mother Nature. Others appeared as though they had been dug yesterday. It was as if someone was searching for a lost artifact. He made a mental note to be away by sunrise, therefore mitigating the chances of being spotted by whoever was doing the digging. The bike was propped up against the tree and camping gear unpacked. A tiny one-man tent was erected, and he was devouring a meal of packet noodles and cheese as the last of the daylight bled from the sky. Unless the weather was bad or the mozzies were out in force, he rarely ate within the tent. It was like a coffin in there. The compact and lightweight design came at the expense of having to sleep in it. Before he embarked on the world tour, he would not have considered himself claustrophobic. But each consecutive night spent within the canvas confines forced him to reconsider that position. The cooking equipment was packed away in the dark. The head torch remained in the pannier for risk of alerting his presence to any passers-by. He may have been in the middle of nowhere, but there was no need to tempt fate. As a result, he was forced into an early night. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing. The past few months of cycling across Europe had created a kind of deep fatigue that never really went away. While he was touring through the Eastern Bloc, the bicycle had felt heavier, despite no additional items being added. Upon entering Russia, he noticed the bike requiring more and more effort to keep it moving in a straight line, as though the chain was coated in thick grease and the tyres deflated. He could not remember a time when his legs didn't ache. He had expected to harden up to the 6 to 8 hours of daily cycling, but the opposite seemed to be true. Maybe he wasn't eating enough. Maybe he wasn't getting enough sleep. Maybe he was just over the hours of solitude, the weary body and constant nights in a cramped tent. He promised himself that once he made it to the next town, he would check into a hotel. The only requirements being that there was a bath and a bed. A mechanical hum stirred Tony from his slumber. A check of the watch indicated that it was 1:30. He'd not overslept. It was still dark outside. It took several moments to realise that it was a car engine that woke him. The opening and slamming of a door confirmed it. The vehicle must have already been at the locked gate, idling while the padlock was opened. As if to reaffirm Tony's suspicions, a clutter of chains landed in a heap on the ground. The creak of age-old hinges invited the car to proceed. The glow of the visitor's headlights lit up the tent's thin walls. The stuffy air within his cramped world suddenly felt colder. An anxious sickness deep within his gut began to churn. The vehicle continued to roll forward, and after a few seconds came to a stop. The engine killed, headlights snuffed out. A door was opened again. The rustle of footsteps. A voice spoke in a language Tony did not understand. Another voice sniggered. There were at least two of them, both men by the sounds of it. The accent suggested that they were locals of the motherland. Something clicked and the squashy compression of hydraulic pistons could be heard. Tony suspected it was the car boot opening. A hollow twang of metal on metal gave the impression that a collection of tools was being gathered up. A loud clatter soon followed as the items were dropped onto the grass. From within a confined tent nestled away in the corner of the field, the lone tourist stared up at the taut canvas stretched several inches above his head, struggling to work out what was unfolding. More indecipherable words were exchanged, then a new sound joined the mysterious nighttime gathering. It was as though a third person was also there, but their mouth gagged or taped shut. A series of moans, desperate and pleading, filled the night air. A muted thud silenced the stifled lamentation. A frantic shuffling soon followed, accompanied by the sound of laughter. Something was dragged across the ground. The muffled pleas intensified. A single-worded demand was made by one of the men. Tony was certain the third person was now sobbing. The thought caused a flurry of goosebumps to ripple across his skin. The demand was made again, this time more forceful.
Go, Pat.
An item was collected up off the ground and promptly thrown back down.
Go, Pat.
The sobbing subsided. There was a brief pause. Then the digging began. The unmistakable sound of metal plunging into the earth and the spoils tossed to the side. The action was slow. The process drawn out. Tony's eyes widened as he pieced together the audible clues. The tent started to swirl. The sides, already mere inches from his shaking body, closed in. He racked his memory, attempting to picture what was beyond the campsite. If he was to try and escape, what would he be running into? More fields? A forest? He couldn't be sure. He eyed the tent's entrance, the triangular zipped opening that would need to be negotiated without arousing suspicion. The tent was so narrow that there was no way he could turn around without causing it to shake from side to side. The rustling of the sleeping bag fabric sounded like the crushing of a car to his now hypersensitive hearing. He would have to bend himself double, unzip the flap, and then shimmy out feet first. If he was lucky enough not to be spotted, then he could dash through the trees and... what? Continue running barefoot, dressed in a t-shirt and boxers, until he reached the nearest village and explained through hand actions and gestures what he thought had occurred at a closed campsite? No. He would have to wait. And hope. A check of his watch indicated that it was 1:45. The sedate digging continued. The sobbing reduced to a quiet whimper, not unlike the restrained grief at a funeral. The grinding of the lighter sparking into life occasionally joined the sound of shoveling, the two masters leisurely passing the time while they waited. All Tony could do was lie there and listen to a condemned man dig his own grave. The areas of freshly disturbed soil he passed while crossing the grassy field now took on a new meaning. This was no campsite. The time was rechecked. 2:20. At this rate, they would be here until morning. A rush of cold swept over Tony's tensed body at the realization that if that were the case, there was no doubt that he would be spotted. In a moment of selfishness, he wished for the unfortunate individual to get it over with. There was no need for an innocent tourist to get drawn into whatever this was. The excavating became rhythmical, if at a dawdling tempo. Tony could picture it in his mind's eye. The plunging of hardened metal into the ground. The stomp of a boot on the blade. The prising up of disturbed soil. The tossing of soil up onto the grass. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Another check of the watch. 3:35. How long did it take gravediggers to dig a 6-foot hole? A couple of hours, maybe? It would not be long before the night retreated and the birds began to sing. On many occasions during the trip, the dawn chorus was used as an alarm clock. It was a serene way to start the day, and so in keeping with nature, sleeping outdoors, travelling via pedal power and escaping the cities. But now, that once beautiful sound hung over Tony like the horns of Jericho. At 4:10, the masters broke their silence. Something abrupt was muttered. It was impossible to know whether the required dimensions of the grave had been met, or they had simply grown bored. Whatever the reason, the digging ceased and the sobbing ramped back up. It lacked the pleading from before, and instead was laced with a sense of finality. The gunshot was deafening. The shock coursing through Tony's body muted the second blast. His breathing deepened. His head fell into his hands. Up until now, it was all assumption. Deep down, he hoped for a rational explanation. That it would all just be a humorous misunderstanding. One of the men said something that elicited a bout of laughter. Then the burial began. There were two shovels at work this time. The actions were quick and purposeful. In less than 10 minutes, it was complete. Boots stomped down on the replaced earth, compressing their work. The car engine rumbled back into life. The distant glow of the headlights was again visible through the tense canvas walls. Tony held his breath, lips sucked in. The vehicle let out a whine as it reversed. The gate creaked closed. All that remained was the jangle of the chain being replaced and the padlock snapping shut. But it never came. The car idled. The rumble of the engine masked an exchange between the two men. The sickness rose from Tony's gut and burned his throat. His eyes were screwed tight. His fists clenched tighter. He begged to hear the metallic sound of chains being collected from the ground. Instead, there was a rustling of footsteps moving through long grass. Tony's tensed arms were crossed around his chest. They shook to the rapid beat of his racing heart. "No, please no," he whispered. The footsteps neared, becoming louder and more defined with each step. With each shallow exhale, the tent constricted him inch by inch. A shadow of an approaching figure grew over the canvas wall. A black silhouette loomed. Somewhere in the distance, Tony heard the beginnings of the dawn chorus. A tear streaked down his face. The shadow squatted down. Knock, knock.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of The Other Stories. Dig was written by Ian J. Middleton, narrated by James Barnett, aka Jimmy Horrors, edited by Duncan Muggleton with music by Duncan Muggleton and Tom Robson, and sound effect provided by freesound.org. The episode illustration was provided by Luke Spooner of Carry On House. A quick thanks to our community managers, Joshua Boucher and Jasmine Arch, and to Carolyn O'Brien for helping with our submission reading. And of course to Ben Errington, Lord of the Dance, for his social media river dance he performs each week from the social media content stage. The dance, Ben! For more of Ian J. Middleton's work, head over to www.ianjmiddleton.com. James Barnett is the producer of the Night's End podcast, a short story fiction podcast with tales of horror and the paranormal. Search for it wherever you get your podcasts, and you can also catch other works of his at jamesbarnettcreative.com. The Other Stories is a production of the Story Studio Hawk and Cleaver, and is brought to you with a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. That means don't change it, don't sell it, but by all means, share the hell out of it. So, until next time.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla heavy-duty construction adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money.